I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. My guest today, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis, the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. She and the school board will discuss her budget for next year at tomorrow night's school board meeting. Today on Midday, what's in the budget and what's left out as enrollment in city schools continues to slide? How do charter schools fare? What will literacy coaches accomplish? And with images of students huddled in freezing classrooms last winter fresh in memory, what will several new buildings slated to open in the fall mean for our city's kids? And have some communities and parents been left out in the cold on an enrollment task force? The president of the city council thinks so. We'll see what Dr. Sonia Sonalesis thinks when Midday starts right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. With the school year less than 6 weeks away from its conclusion today and tomorrow here on our program, I'm going to have conversations with the heads of both public school systems in Baltimore City and Baltimore County. Both systems have had a bit of high-profile turmoil this year. In the city, students endured some rocky weeks this winter in which heating systems in multiple buildings showed their age. And in Baltimore County, their former chief, Dallas Dance, is in jail, serving 6 months for perjury after failing to report outside income while he was the county's superintendent. Tomorrow, my guest will be Verlita White, who has been chosen by the county school board to succeed Dance, but whose permanent appointment has been put on hold by the state superintendent, Karen Salmon, who has ethical concerns about Ms. White. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, but today we focus on the Baltimore City public school system with its CEO, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis. Tomorrow night, the city school board will consider the budget for the 2018-19 school year. There has been much less drama associated with the budget process this time around than in recent years. This budget does not call for any teacher layoffs. It does call for an increase in literacy coaching, and it includes some cuts for charter schools. It has been developed in the context of shrinking enrollment, a persistent problem that speaks to the larger challenges of the city in attracting and keeping young families. Dr. Sonia Sonalesis joins me today here in Studio A. You can join us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming live, and a little later in the program, we'll take your calls and comments. Dr. Sonalesis, it's always a pleasure. Good to see you.
It's great to be here, Tom.
So let's talk first about enrollment.
Sure.
The enrollment in the city schools grew somewhat between 2011 and 2015. Mm-hmm. But this year, as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we have about 1,700 fewer students than we did last year. We're at a 10-year low. Mm-hmm. So is this a trend that you see continuing in 2019, and is the budget that you're going to be presenting to the board tomorrow, does that reflect this trend heading south when it comes to numbers?
Sure. So we do know, based on kind of census tracking, based on birth rates, we are projected to continue to have a decline in enrollment, just based on the number of families and the number of families having babies in Baltimore City. I think what we are working towards is how do we attract and keep more families in Baltimore City public schools of the families that are here. So we have taken into account the projected decline in enrollment and based on, again, census figures within the city and birth rates. But we're not just saying that that's a given. What we've really been trying to do is look kind of internally and say, what can we do to actually really buttress enrollment and to really mitigate or lessen some of the impact of the projected declines in enrollment?
How good are you at guessing that? I mean, for example, this year, the 1,700 number, is that something you anticipated when you prepared the budget for the current year, which was, a year prior to this year?
No, and it's a great question. Yes. So we did project about that amount. And again, some of that was birth rates and past trends. But the other piece for us was really looking at, and as a good number of the listening public knows this already, but part of the closing of schools has also been part of the process of how do we make sure that our utilization rate is maximized when you have large numbers of under-enrolled school buildings. the cost for the entire district goes up. So, addressing the enrollment challenges really is multifaceted. It's not one thing or the other. But we also know in the city that our schools that families regard highly, that their children want to attend, that they find out about or know about, in many cases, there are waiting lists for those schools. In many cases, those are schools, both traditional and charter, quite frankly, that a wide variety of parents and families are happy with. So really, the ultimate goal needs to be getting a critical mass of maximized schools in maximized school buildings with quality programming that families can count on and that meet their needs.
Schools don't exist in a vacuum, obviously. There are plenty of reasons people choose to live where they live, whether it be in the city of Baltimore or anywhere else. People point to crime in the schools as the two major drivers of people's decision-making when it comes to living in our city. So to the extent that you can control the quality of the schools, that's one thing. But what you can do about crime is a little bit more obtuse. I mean, clearly education is going to be a big tool in fighting rising crime rates. But those are long-term projects. What is it? I mean, last year we heard about city teachers, you know, knocking door to door, trying to find kids who weren't enrolled, who should be enrolled, kids who may have dropped out in the high school level, little kids who weren't enrolled, but could be. I mean, what are the things that you can do as a school system to buttress enrollment?
So, and we have a number of those, one in place, the B3 initiative that you referenced in terms of the door knocking campaign, where we partnered with both the city and the BTU. The Baltimore Teachers Union, with that effort. One of the things that we saw as part of that effort and that the teachers that engaged in that effort told us was that families were really struck by the very direct outreach, right? The very direct person-to-person exchange about what was going on in schools, the real kind of feet to the ground desire to have families in city schools. And it was our first year, and we did have some early success, but we were really planting the seeds. And we've already talked with both the city and the teachers union this year. We're going to continue that effort. We feel like we really have traction. The other piece is that in schools that are really looking at their programming, what kind of extracurriculars are offered, what kind of sports. It's really tied to our blueprint for success. And a lot of the whole child piece, when I go around to my meetings and community meetings across the city, often what I hear from parents is and families is they want, you know, full year of arts. They want their kids to have music. They want to know their middle schoolers can play a sport. And so within our whole child initiative, we've gotten a really good amount of positive feedback from families that are saying those are the kind of things that make us want to stay, in addition, of course, to high quality teaching and learning.
Governor Hogan has long been a big fan of vouchers for private school. As I understand it, there are more than 900 families in Baltimore who've taken advantage of that program, and they're sending their kids to private schools. There's a long tradition of the more affluent members of our community sending their kids, this includes my family, sending their kids to private schools. How much does that impact your ability to keep students in city schools?
Well, and I guess because I've worked in school systems where there's always been a variety of options for families, I think one of the things that we have found over and over again is when we provide diverse, enriching, high-quality programming, we actually compete quite well. So for a number of our elementary schools, I would say that we, in various parts of the city, we give those schools a run for their money. And I've talked to representatives from a variety of non-public communities, and they can verify where we actually run neck and neck. I think the challenge is, one, people want consistency. They don't want to have variable quality within schools. And I can understand that both as a parent and as a community member. We know families are going to make different choices. We want to be in the running. We want to say, we want a family to actually have to make a serious decision. And I run into families all the time. And it's wonderful when I find a family that doesn't know who I am, so they can just kind of speak freely. And what they want to know is, where where are the public options? Where should I be looking? Most families who have already decided on either a parochial or independent school education, because that's what's best for their family. There are some of those. There will always be some, and they have existed in every city I've ever worked in. But I think where we are really working is for that middle band of family that really wants to consider Baltimore City Public Schools and know of a handful of quality of options. How do we let them know of the vast number of schools and some of the hidden gems, quite frankly, that when parents find them, and I could, you know, name a few now, that when parents and families find them, say, wow, I didn't know this school was here, but we love our local school. We love our principal. And so how, Dr. S, can we help you get the word out? I was down in Federal Hill a couple of weeks ago, and a number of families there were not shouting and screaming. They wanted to know, how can we help get the word out? Because we did have those options, and we chose to remain in a Baltimore City public school because our young person is having a wonderful experience. That's not true for all families, and that's what we're working on.
It's interesting. The irony is that a number of parochial schools have closed due to low enrollment over the last several years, and independent schools, I know this anecdotally, not officially, you know, they're hurting for students too, because it's incredibly expensive to send your child to an independent school. So they, in a way, they have parallel problems to the school. So you established a task force to talk about and to discuss enrollment. And there's been a bit of a kerfluffle about this. Jack Young, the president of the city council, seems upset that this task force didn't include certain people. Can you tell us what your intention with this task force is? I understand you're meeting with Council President Young tomorrow morning to address his concerns. He did introduce a resolution last Monday night in City Council to call for greater representation of the Latina community and the African-American community on the actual task force. So let's start with what you wanted to accomplish and learn with this group.
Sure. So I think, you know, in terms of the intent of the group, it was really, you know, another step in this overall effort to raise enrollment within Baltimore City. It was never a one-stop working group. It was never the only time that we were going to convene a group. We wanted to start with some of the folks first outside of the system, people who were experiencing Baltimore City schools from different vantage points. So we did have representatives from City Hall, and I think Council President Young was right to note that there were no representatives from City Council. Will be rectifying that. You know, in terms of the diversity, it was an initial group. This was never intended to be the only group, but we have representatives from marketing. We have representatives from different fields. We have folks who work within a variety of communities across the city, some grassroots, but not every grassroots organization. And so we took that feedback. And because we knew that this group was not going to be the only group, we will be incorporating that feedback. We actually have shared the list of a number of individuals who were part of that group. And there is some racial and ethnic diversity reflected in that. And so, you know, the City Council President and I can differ on that. Could there be more? Absolutely. We're working. We always have an equity focus. We can always get better. And we took that feedback from groups. But I will say this, that as the CEO of the system, my job is to work on enrollment. And so being proactive is part of who I am as a leader. I don't like wait just for folks to ask me to do things. That's part of why I get paid, is to be proactive, and it's to take feedback. We will take the feedback and we will move forward. And I have many committees where I solicit outside feedback. So I don't run them all through every governmental agency, every time I convene a work group, but I always welcome the feedback.
And in the you know, somewhat drawn out discussion about who should have been on it, who shouldn't, et cetera, it's easy to get lost in the scuffle. The purpose of it, and one of the things, as I understand it, is that you wanted to examine the points in students' lives at which they stop attending schools.
Yes.
Before we take a break, can you give us some insight into what that point is?
Well, and it's very interesting because we traditionally had points between, say, elementary school, the transition from elementary to middle. Families have concerns around that transition. And we also see that we have large numbers of our young people, once they get to high school, that if we can re-engage them, that is a significant increase in student enrollment. And so we've been asking ourselves, where does that occur? And then I'd say the other piece is in pre-K and kindergarten. How do we do a better job getting the message out to families who really are considering city schools? So those are kind of three major, I'd say, points within the lifespan of students and their families that we've been taking a deep dive into.
But you're confident that there is a pool of families in Baltimore City who are considering Baltimore City Public Schools, who may be thinking about leaving but can be kept into the fold.
Oh, absolutely. We see it in the numbers. We see it in both formal and informal conversations. We're working on, again, parents who say, give me a reason to stay, who want it. It's not all gloom and doom. Again, there are people who will bolt for other reasons, and that's fine. But believe me, both our quantitative data and our informal data is saying we have significant families who are like, please give me a reason to stay. I want to be part of city schools.
Excellence matters. We're going to talk about what excellence costs when we come back from a break. Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is my guest today here in Studio A. She's the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. Our phone number on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayWIPR. And you can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our conversation. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's program, our focus on education continues with Baltimore County Schools Interim Superintendent Verlita White. Despite majority support from the County School Board, Ms. White's appointment as the permanent superintendent has been put on hold pending an ethics inquiry initiated by the state school superintendent, Karen Salmon. Verlita White joins me tomorrow right here in Studio A. Tomorrow, we will also hear from Baltimore Sun education reporter Liz Bowie. We'll get her analysis of the Baltimore City school budget, the Baltimore County ethics investigations, and the situation in Prince George's County, where their embattled school CEO, Dr. Kevin Maxwell, has announced his resignation effective at the end of the school year. So that's all coming up tomorrow. If you're just joining us today, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is my guest. She's the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. The city school board will be considering next year's budget at their meeting tomorrow night at school headquarters on North Avenue. You are welcome to be part of our conversation. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR. And if you want to come to the WIPR Facebook page, you're welcome to do that, where we are streaming our conversation live. So, Dr. Sonalesis, when it comes to the budget, you've got lower enrollment, and obviously that has a big impact on the budget because so much of the formula for funding has to do with numbers of bodies. Mm-hmm. What about the folks who would say, well, look, if you have fewer bodies, you need fewer dollars? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a correlation between the number of kids you got to teach and the number of teachers you need and the number That's of right. administrative personnel you need. I mean, is there anything to the argument that says the school system doesn't need any more money?
So I think, again, one of the things that the school system has acknowledged for at least the past decade or so has been that, and as I mentioned earlier, that there absolutely is a need to right size the number of schools that we have, because the number of schools, to your point, Tom, increases the number of teachers that we need, the number of administrators that we need. And we have been working to close schools with each of the new school buildings, which we are thrilled about, by the way. That's another thing that
attracts four this year, and you got five more tap for next year.
And I will say one of our first ones, Fort Worthington, is absolutely busting at the seams already. Mm-hmm. So enrollment is not an issue at our newer schools. And again, because they attract families. And so one of the things that we've done is we have closed schools as we open new ones. I think the real question, which the legislature has asked, and I think rightly so, and the public should ask, is how rapidly do we close them? And how do we close them in ways that a variety of communities that frankly have been under-resourced for years don't feel as if another institution is being taken from them? And so the continued commitment of both the board and I to find ways to right-size the district will, in fact, continue to help with that. But to just say that that's all of the issue and we have enough, I think really neglects the complexity of the issue.
One of the line items that's going up is for literacy coaches. Mm-hmm. One of the line items that appears to be going down is charter schools. So let's take those in that order. What is a literacy coach? Mm-hmm. Where are they being deployed? And what do you hope to accomplish?
Sure. So the literacy coaches are actually an outgrowth of our blueprint for success and our focus on literacy across the district. Those 20 coaches are being deployed. Matter of fact, I got to meet a literacy coach in one of those 20 literacy coaches about a week ago. And those 20 schools, we have a cohort of 20 schools that have all come together as a learning community to say, we really want to learn from one another, and we want to go deeply in looking at how we can rapidly increase the level and the quality of student writing, student reading, student speaking and listening. And that part of our focus, what we're hoping that cohort of 20 schools, they've committed to being very open in their learning and sharing best practices that we can then begin to populate other schools within the city, because we know that teachers and school leaders take the learning from other teachers and other school leaders far more than they would from me or someone else from central office. So that investment of 20 literacy coaches is really an investment in saying that literacy matters, high quality college and career level writing matters. And so these are experts. These are folks that will really be on the ground.
And you're choosing these based on the fact that the communities themselves, the schools themselves, are requesting it, or are these underperforming schools that you think need a boost?
The great part about it, Tom, is it's a combination of both. So schools self-selected, many of whom have kind of intractable or a long trajectory of underperformance, but some are schools that are fair to Midland who say, we want to be great. We don't want to just be good. We want larger percentages of our young people there. So the great part about that group of 20 is that schools can learn from one another. And really, we've got a commitment to developing best practice sites within Baltimore City. Our folks have said, we want examples of exemplary practice here in the city, and that's what these 20 schools are going to do.
Can you put a price tag on what it's going to cost to do that in fiscal 19, which is next school year, as opposed to what we're not spending on it this year?
Sure. So it's probably about an approximate $2 million, if you look at each of those positions and round them generally, that are going there. We reduced some of our contracts with outside contractors and consultants. The teaching and learning team did a great job in combing through those and cutting back. And then we're also, frankly, using our Title I dollars, our federal dollars, in a lot more targeted way.
When it comes to funding formulas, the Kerwin Commission, which has been in business for an awfully long time, and they have delayed their findings now for some time. I guess we're going to hear something from them this summer. The election is June 26th. The primary election is June 26th, and there's some speculation that they will release some findings, at least preliminary findings, after that. The state's current funding formula is called the Thornton formula. That hasn't been upgraded since 2009, so that's a 10-year-old deal. You have a thing called the Bridge to Kerwin.
Yes.
What is your expectation, and how do you budget for fiscal 19, given the fact that the Kerwin Commission at some point is going to release some recommendations? The legislature at some point next year, it's assumed, will make some revisions to the funding formulas for schools. It could be that the Baltimore City schools come out on the short end of the stick as well as the better end of the stick. I mean, how do you, what's your take? You're the one who follows this more closely than perhaps anybody.
So I think a couple of things. I think one, the bridge to Kerwin has absolutely helped. And it's the reason why we don't have to worry about layoffs this year. We advocated, we pushed for an extended, you know, multi-year funding package to be able to sustain the school system, to make the investments. And I think really the state of Maryland, you know, the legislature, you know, the governor, the mayor, the city council, like everyone came out because parents, families, young people, teachers, school leaders went to the streets and said, this is important. Our kids matter too. I am confident that there's a growing number. It's actually really encouraging, Tom, to go out and hear the number of people say, I now know about Kerwin, and we're watching. We're watching to see what they do. And I think that, for me, is public schooling at its best, for the public to say, this is the level of funding. And you know this because I've said this before. I continue to iterate. You know, the last two state-commissioned funding bodies, not Baltimore City staff, outside entities who know school funding, have continually said that Baltimore City is underfunded. And so really, frankly, the community of Maryland, the community that is Baltimore City, and the community of Maryland have a choice in front of them. We will either fund the education of young people in Baltimore City to the level that twice before and now third time over with Kerwin is saying that we are underfunded. This is not me saying we're underfunded. These are outside entities. And so the populace is going to have to make a decision. Either we're going to fund education for low-income kids in the state of Maryland as the wealthiest state in the nation. You know, I come from Massachusetts, and over a period of time, Massachusetts invested money in its public schools so that when higher standards came, there was already a foundation laid. And so frankly, the state of Maryland, the city of Baltimore, is going to have to decide which direction, right? It's the path. Are we going to take the path less chosen, or are we going to take the easier path?
Yeah, and we've talked before about how Massachusetts is, in many people's estimation, the paradigm for what mm-hmm. Maryland could be. Mm-hmm. Here's a couple of suggestions from Jennifer, who emails these suggestions for making it easier for parents who can afford to send their children to parochial or private schools to choose Baltimore mm-hmm. public schools instead. She says, number one, make sure that premier programs in city high schools send out acceptances early enough before private school deadlines for deposits, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a timing thing. Mm-hmm. She also says increase the number of pre-K slots so that every elementary school has enough. Otherwise, the parents who can afford to send their kids to private pre-Ks, they don't come back for kindergarten because they're already sort of in that independent loop.
Well, and I will just say, Jennifer, a big thank you for those. Those make a great deal of sense, and they really verify what we've heard before. So big thank you to Jennifer. I couldn't argue with either of those.
Let's go to the phones. James in Northwest Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Santelices.
Good afternoon, Tom and Dr. Santelices. Mr. Williams here. I spoke with a charter school director, and one of the things that I had a two-hour meeting. And one of the things that we talked about was how the money gets spent in each school. And what I found out was the zone schools have to purchase their computers and laptops through Baltimore City school system, when charter schools can go to an outside vendor and purchase laptops and PCs. The price differential is vastly different when you can go to an outside vendor and buy in bulk. Baltimore City's computers and laptops are overpriced, and zone schools have to spend the money at a higher price to purchase the products than a charter school does. This needs to be fixed, Dr. Santelices, plain and simple, because the zone schools have a lot of disadvantaged students, and they're not getting the bang for the buck that the charter schools are. How can you fix this?
Well, Mr. Williams, thank you for that call. Appreciate
it. No, and thank you, Mr. Williams. I think there's a couple of things, because this has been a point that has been brought up before. One of the things that we have looked at centrally is, one, how do we get better pricing? But the other piece that is true for city schools computers is that we have a wide kind of a wide-spanning service agreement. agreement, right? And so we get refreshed computers. We support a central staff that actually goes out and will repurpose computers. So there are a number of principals in traditional schools who will tell you that our IT department actually comes out and brings computers for them when, for example, for testing they don't. I think the point is well taken, and it is a point around deficiencies. But it is also a point about understanding what beyond just the technical equipment comes in the cost of a computer.
Let's talk a little bit about charter schools. We hear from Tiffany on Facebook. I'm one of the parents who stayed in Baltimore because we were able to enroll our kids in a great public school. It's a charter school. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about the future of charter schools due to budget cuts and what that will mean for Baltimore's future. There are some estimates that say some schools could lose as much as $90,000, even more than $1 million mm-hmm. per school in the proposed budget that you're going to be talking about tomorrow night.
Sure. And one of the things I will say is that charter schools are public schools. And Baltimore City has the largest number of charter schools within the state of Maryland. And we have high-performing, highly sought-after charter schools and traditional schools. I think the challenge this year was that we knew last year, so of the, I think it's about a $5.5 million drop for charter schools overall this year in the budget. Of that drop, $4.4 million of that drop is due to, frankly, an undercounting error that occurred last year around special education students. We notified charters of that error back in November, and I made the decision because
what's that mean? You thought there were more special ed
right.
kids
we
than there were?
We undercounted. We undercounted. So we overcompensated. So charter schools actually ended up getting more with that count. We discovered that error, and I sent out a letter, I believe, in November to that effect. And I did not think it was fair to take that money back mid-year from those schools. So we sent out the letter in November. We flagged that this was a concern. And this was, by the way, during a year where traditional schools lost a great deal of money. And still, I said, it's not fair to charters, but we want to give people advance notice that this is coming. So $4.4 million of that $5.5 million is due to a correctional error that we informed the schools of in November that we held off, frankly, charging them
for. So this shouldn't be a surprise.
Right. So a large portion of this should not be a surprise. The other portion of that 4.4 is due to a declined enrollment. And that is true for all schools in Baltimore City, both traditional and charter schools. Your funding is still determined by your student enrollment. So 4.4 of that 5.5 is actually due to those two shifts. The remaining one, which, again, there can be healthy debate about, and we're fine doing that. We had some outside folks take a look. And frankly, they made even starker recommendations for cuts that I would not even present to the board because I knew that it would be an unsustainable cut to charters. Charters are a valuable part of the portfolio within city schools. Some of our charter schools were out with us advocating for additional funds and additional students. But a shift in, we'll have healthy debate about a shift about where we take that 2% overhead cost, our administrative cost. We can have a healthy debate about that, but that is only 1/5 of the total amount that charters lost. And again, I would just say there were proposals for additional deeper cuts that I refused.
There is a perception, whether it's true or not, that charter schools are better. I mean, there just is, right? So people who send their kids to charter schools,
absolutely.
First of all, there's perhaps more intense parental involvement in charter schools because these parents are the ones that ginned up the school to begin with. So there is this perception that charter schools are better. So when people who are in charter schools hear that it's being cut by $5.5 million, you know, obviously that's going to set off a lot of alarm.
But in the same way that it set off an alarm last year for parents in of students in traditional schools who love their schools, who go to excellent traditional schools, it set off alarms for them. So I would say that cuts are cuts. No school should have to take a cut, which is why we need Kerwin to do the right thing. And then the second piece I would say is I fully understand that's a perception. We have amazing charter schools, but we also have charter schools that are slated for closure, and they're slated for closure because of underperformance. So we have a mixed bag. We have neighborhood schools Traditional schools, as you know, an earlier caller mentioned, City College regularly has a waiting list, frankly, outside of the city. If we were to admit all of the county students that want to come to City College High School, that school would never have to take a cut. But because Cindy Harkham and her team are committed to remaining focused,
she's the principal,
to serving Baltimore City public school students, they don't do that. But she regularly gets calls outside. So we have high quality schools that are both traditional and charter, and we have schools that have underperforming challenges that are both traditional and charter.
Got to take a break. Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. When we come back, we'll try to take some more of your calls and comments. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page, and you can find us on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR. Before we take a little break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who has compiled a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 17 years. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides and the victim identifications that are posted on the Baltimore Police Department's Facebook page. So far this year, 97 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. 3 unidentified male victims of homicide from the week before last were named by police last week. They are Shaka Butcher, age 29, Devante Tripps, age 25, and Kevin Mason, age 39. Last week, 4 people were the victims of homicide in our city. They are Gilbert Bates Jr., age 30, D'Amico Baldwin, age 38, Terrence Scott, age 38, and Kynard Butler. He was 26 years old. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday, and we are delighted that that is the case. My guest today, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis. She is the CEO of the Baltimore City Public School System. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Dr. Sonalesis, we have a question from my colleague here at WYPR, Dominique Bonessi, who covers city affairs. Will you work with the city council to balance the funding to city schools due to the recent Title I cut? So what are some of the options for alternative funding? So explain to folks what Title I is and if there's a particular source of funding you can tap to replace the funds that you're no longer getting.
Sure. So with regard to Title I funding, and for the audience, Title I funding is federal dollars that are directed towards students who live in low-income communities. And so our Title I dollars as a district actually have not been severely cut this year. I think what she may be referencing is a different distribution of Title I dollars. What does get cut and what she is absolutely on point with is that the challenge we are facing is in the undercounting of some of our immigrant students. And because of well-founded fear and concerns about what, you know, government action, either by ICE or others, might occur, we have a number of families who understandably are not filling out forms. They're not counted. We went away from the district prior to my arrival, went away from collecting forms at the school level. And so we're looking at possible placeholders, but it does create a gap. And so we've worked this year to mitigate that in some of our schools that have high immigrant populations, high ELL populations. I'm in constant consultation with other superintendents across the country with burgeoning Latino populations and immigrant populations. It is an issue. It is absolutely an issue. We mitigated some of that, particularly for our traditional schools, within our school formula. So we took a look at that this year. We made changes in the formula. We held certain schools harmless, traditional schools harmless. Charter schools are under the charter formula. And so they...
Holding them funded. Harmless means what?
I'm
exactly?
Sorry, I'm using educationese. What that means, yes, is we tried to make sure that they did not, even though the number of Title I students may have officially declined, we tried not to reflect that decline as severely in the money that they actually received. So we worked really hard. We have a limited pot to do that. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't what we wanted it to be. But within the traditional school funding formula, we committed to that because we know it's an issue. And we have a large immigrant population.
Here's an email from Matt, who lives in Baltimore County. And he asks, do you believe that the city of Baltimore, not the state, is paying its fair share of local tax revenue on schools? Baltimore County spends almost 60% of local revenue, while the city spends less than 20%, while the state spends more per pupil on city students than any other jurisdiction in the state. Now, I can't fact check Matt's numbers
about
60% and 20% between
right.
the county and the city. But obviously, when you go to Annapolis, you've got to deal with legislators who are outside of the city of Baltimore.
Yes.
So what's the
no,
pitch?
And Matt has his pulse on that as a challenge and as a question. I think this year, what we do know is that the mayor committed more dollars towards capital because she had extra to commit. And that is a question. It's a constant question. And I think this mayor has at least made movement in that direction to do it. It's a question, but it is also a question moving forward about what does the tax base look like within the city. There is a dual need to attract businesses here, and so we give tax breaks to those businesses, and that's understandable. The ramifications is it means less income coming in. And so I think Matt has highlighted that. I think, again, the mayor has said that when she can add, she has. And it's an ongoing question about investment in the city. And, you know, the state has got to make a decision about the extent to which they're going to invest in, one, increasing the business in Baltimore City with regards to tax breaks that are given, and two, what is the responsibility of the state to fund critical masses of low-income families who are not going to generate the same kind of tax base that higher-income communities do? But he's absolutely right. It is a question.
Up until a few months ago, you had a very high-profile young man running your teacher recruitment department, DeRay McKesson,
yes,
who has left the system, is now doing other things. He's hosting a podcast. And he got pretty high marks for attracting good teachers, making sure that the positions were filled. Enrollment and attracting students is a challenge, but enrollment in your pool of teachers is a challenge as well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you expect will be the case in September? Will you be fully staffed for these new positions that you're hoping to start? And then, you know, are you able to retain teachers? Are salaries in Baltimore City competitive? Are working conditions competitive? How are you getting along with the union these days?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that stand?
So I think we know in Baltimore City, and we did the analysis. It began under DeRay's leadership, who, by the way, I had a chance to talk to over the weekend, and he's doing well. That began there, and our current chief, Jeremy Grant Skinner, and his team are continuing. And we know the bottom line there is we have more of a teacher retention issue than we do a teacher recruitment issue. We get large numbers of teachers who say, I don't want to teach the most privileged children. I want, you know, they are in large numbers equity warriors. They are people who want to serve the young people who don't have the resources. But what we are finding is that some of our working conditions are not conducive to them staying long term. And when we're working with our school leaders, we have school leaders who have no retention issues, who have very little turnover. And so we're looking and saying for those leaders, how are you creating a professional learning community? And then some of the new 21st century buildings, teachers should not be in conditions where, you know, that the whole world, frankly, got to see in January, where they, along with their students, have to have coats and mittens and gloves and hats on, and who are, you know, sweating in, you know, as soon as there's a day above 85. There's something wrong with that. And we're working. I love seeing the faces of teachers when they walk into the new school buildings. But it is also about the working environment. And we know in our schools where you have high quality school leaders, where they're creating those professional opportunities, teachers are staying. So we have a retention challenge, and we're working with that with our school's chief, John Davis, as well as with our human capital office.
What's up with the heating and cooling system, since you brought it up? I understand.
Aren't
that
you glad I did, Tom? Aren't you glad I did?
If you hadn't, I probably would have. But, you know, I mean, obviously there were horrific images, you know, in January where the heating system didn't work. Yeah. But I understand that this new budget for next year includes more maintenance workers to stay on top of that kind of thing. But is that problem licked? And are we going to have problems if we have, you know, we had 3 days of 90-degree heat just last week.
Right.
That set a record each one of those days. You got 6 more weeks of the school year. Are we going to have any problems on the heating side or the air conditioning side, rather?
So a couple of things. One, those 16 maintenance workers that were added, you know, Dr. Lynette Washington, who oversees our maintenance, she did a real good job in forecasting kind of price and kind of cost benefit. And we know that by branching out, building out their team, we will hopefully be able to have far more on the ground support for systems, but the systems are still outdated. They're still archaic. That's part of why they're falling down. But we are working on maintenance. We had great support from the city. And our team is also, we're getting ready to convene another working group, another outside advisory group of professionals to help us think through what are the adjustments that we can make within the maintenance of our school buildings and facilities. And it's why every time a 21st century building opens, we breathe another sigh of relief because we have updated systems. We do have challenges with heat. What I have committed to is really having a clear standard where we will dismiss school. But the problem does not go away in its entirety just because of maintenance. When you have systems, you know, two of the major, most costly systems that went down are at high schools where their HVAC system is 20 years beyond where.
So next year it'll be 21 years.
Next
so
year
is it
going to
happen
21?
Again in January?
Well, and that's why we put in for more CIP dollars. Our team worked with our state legislators. They did our city delegation to the state did a fabulous job this year in really helping to secure more money. So we're hoping to direct it to some of those. So I want to say a big thank you out to our city delegation who did a great job this year.
Let's see if we can sneak one more quick call in. This is from a teacher who's just retired, as I understand it, Eugenia. Am I pronouncing your name right? In Baltimore, welcome to the program. If you could make a quick comment, I'd be grateful.
Are you asking me, Eugenie?
Yes, yes, Eugenie.
Oh, hi.
Welcome.
Yes, my comment, it isn't a comment, it's a question. I'm a retired teacher just last year, and most of my students in high schools, I taught both social studies and then Chinese, they could not really read well. I mean, between 6th and 8th grade level, most of them. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if there's a program citywide or even in any school that has it's kind of a stopgap measure between that point where the kids are learning to read and then reading to learn.
All right. Thanks for the question.
No, it's a great question, Eugene. I just want to tell you that's part of why within the focus of the blueprint, we're really looking at 8th grade for those measures, because we know what you are saying to be true. We see it in the data. And so really the literacy focus and the literacy coaches within that middle grades are really targeting that. But you're right on point.
Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. The school board is meeting to discuss next year's budget tomorrow night from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock at school headquarters here in Baltimore on North Avenue. We've got a link to details on our website, wypr.org/midday. That is it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, more on local education. Baltimore County Interim Superintendent Verlita White will be my guest. We'll also have a rundown on the latest in education news from around the state with Baltimore Sun education reporter Liz Bowie. I'd like to thank the Diz for lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. So, Dr. Sonalesis, today the choice for lunch
in Baltimore elementary schools. I mean, give you the choice and have you choose.
Okay.
We did this once before, and unfortunately, you did not choose the correct one. So you did not have a chance to go on to our grand prize round when we did this the last time. But today, your choices are zesty Italian cold cut sub or a PB&J sandwich.
PB&J.
That is correct. And you have a chance to go on to our grand prize round. Well, no one should have an Italian sub that is described as zesty. You do not want zestiness in an Italian sub. You just want the meat. You want the lettuce, the tomatoes, the onions, the mustard. You don't want zestiness.
I'll tell our food service to you.
Yes. Excellent choice. All right, I'm Tom Hall. Here and Now is up next after the news at the top of the hour. We appreciate your listening. Have a great day.